What is happening, everyone? It is the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I am your host, your co-host, Arthur Arkish, alongside Eric Adholm. And Eric, what's happening, my man?
Just happy to be here, dude.
Yes.
We got playoffs. We got 11 games left in the season. I don't count the Pro Bowl, so it's coming down to the end here, man.
That's right. We've got an exciting wildcard slate to try and break down. We are happy to be here. Eric, there are six coaches in the NFL who are no longer where they were, and that number could still potentially grow. But we've seen some early movement on the the quest of these clubs to hire new coaches. And maybe we'll start there. I guess we'll start there. I just want your general thoughts on the Oakland Raiders and John Gruden putting his staff together behind the scenes. And it looks like this is really going to happen. I mean, should we expect an announcement pretty much any time here, do you think?
Yeah, as soon as we publish this podcast, he will accept the job. Right. Now, I talked to somebody at the mothership, that would be ESPN, and they obviously weren't going to confirm or deny or sort of, you know, be on the record for anything. But there was sort of a suggestion that he's got this game this weekend that he's broadcasting on Saturday, I believe. Mm-hmm. Saturday. He's Chiefs, right? Yeah.
Yep, so first one of the weekend.
Yep. So once that happens, you know, he's ready to kind of move on some things. And I thought it was funny how he kind of played coy and, well, I hope I'm a candidate for the job. Yeah, you're a candidate, John, because they wouldn't have probably fired Jack Del Rio. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, I guess my interest lies in who he might bring in as a coordinator. People mm-hmm. who are, you know, a little more dialed in on the modern NFL, because there were times when Gruden's offense at the end of the Tampa days looked a little bit archaic, and I hate to say it, but, you know, that's kind of why he was let go, I think.
There have been rumblings. Paul Gunther defensively.
Good coach.
Out in Cincinnati,
yeah.
Or I think has opted to explore other options. That report came out, I think, about 1 hour after the Marvin Lewis extension was announced. So Gunther reportedly the front runner on defense. John Morton is a name that's been affixed with Gruden on offense. Morton did really nice work with the Jets this
mm-hmm.
season.
So Craig Olsen, the veteran coach, has also been mentioned as maybe an assistant head coach, quarterback's coach, something along that. They're going to put a good resource into to helping Derek Carr out, I think.
Do you think that the allure of the just the name and in the face, John Gruden, and Mark Davis's sort of obsession that we've learned for years now in bringing him back, do you think that's maybe clouding his candidacy? I mean, I don't know. It sounds like in some circles we're all just ready to once again anoint the Raiders to Super Bowl contender. There's a lot of things that need to be fixed, and you did just allude to the fact John Gruden hasn't done this in a while. I don't know that he's the surefire hire that maybe some are sort of billing him as.
Yeah, he's obviously hungry. I think he feels like he has a legacy that's maybe left a little bit mm-hmm. unwritten as far as his coaching goes. I think he obviously feels like he has the energy to do it, but right, being able to kind of assimilate a little bit more scheme-wise and all that stuff. And who knows? Maybe he's gained some perspective and some advantage as an announcer that we could never – you know, he's met with every coach there is and, you know, had time looking at the league as a whole, which a lot of – you know, I don't think Mike McCarthy gets a lot of chance to – you know, Bill Belichick I'm sure gets a look, but, you know, stepping back is maybe some sort of a hidden advantage that we don't consider a lot. So, I don't know. We'll see. Do I think Mark Davis is putting too much into this? If he's giving him ownership stock, yeah, I do. If he's mortgaging the, you know, kind of a somewhat a cash poor franchise, then I do. So that there's absolutely a concern of like you said, this the deification or the hagiography of John Gruden here.
Gruden was pretty adamant that that's not part of this deal.
Right.
Interesting. Of course, it was Adam Schefter and Chris Mortensen with the initial report last Saturday saying that potentially ownership stake was involved and that Mark Davis has included that in part of his pitch in the past to Gruden. That would be completely unprecedented.
The only one that I know of, and I love reading about NFL history, the only guy I could think of was Vince Lombardi when he went to the Redskins in 1969, 70, whatever that was. He had stockholder share in the team, and he was also, like, I think the executive vice president as well. He held some kind of front office title. I don't remember, but Vince Lombardi. You know, I mean, this is – I'm not saying John Gruden isn't a great coach or wasn't at one point, but my goodness, you know, this was a legendary coach. The Super Bowl trophy is named after the guy. So other than that, I'm not aware of anything like this. And other owners may say, what in the heck are you doing, Mark? You're making it worse for us. You know, this is going to be something we have to worry about now.
Speaking of conflicts, and then we'll move on after the whole Oakland thing, but I know John Gruden and Andy Reid are boys and go way back, but Reid probably not thrilled this week that Gruden's sitting in on all the production meetings and viewing practice and getting a lot of the, you know, getting a firsthand look at a lot of the inner workings in Kansas City this week.
Andy Reid's favorite saying, I think, or at least to the media members, is we'll see how that goes. So he may invoke that a lot more with John. Hey, yeah, what's the story with? We'll see how that goes. What's the? What are you going to do on Sunday? Well, we'll see how that goes. So I could see that happening quite a bit. I hadn't thought about it. That's a good point.
It'll be fun to, you know, you got the two newbies in Anthony Lynn and Vance Joseph, and then potentially here with Gruden and Reid, kind of the old pals and the long timers taking over in the AFC West, which many of us thought would be the best division in football entering the season. It didn't really materialize that way. I think we can all agree the NFC South was the best. Well, obviously, they got three teams in the playoffs, and it's been a great year for that division. But before we take a little look, Eric, and this is the Pro Football Weekly podcast, check us out on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review after you've subscribed over there. Also check out our sponsor lootcrate.com. The best surprise you know is coming. We always like to break down the games. Obviously there's only four of them to get to, so we'll hit on each of them briefly, but I do just want to ask if there's anything else that's just sort of jumped out at you. It's very early. No team has filled their head coaching position.
Right.
Obviously we're just starting to learn about each team's short lists, which are, you know, is interesting. It kind of gives you a little bit of a peek behind what's going to go into the decision making process for each. Pat Shurmur's card is pretty full. Josh McDaniels is full. There was a report, and I apologize, I can't remember who it was. Someone reported, I think it was at ESPN, that Matt Patricia has pretty much heard from every team with an opening. But we haven't heard the leaked requests for Patricia yet from more than at least half of them, I don't believe.
Yeah, that's a good call. Maybe he hasn't. Maybe he's sort of said that he wants to limit what he wants to do, and he's only going to take X number of interviews, one, two, three, I don't know what. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of it in those terms. I mean, yeah, so, you know, there are a few names that are on multiple teams. I guess I was a little surprised that I think New York Giants finally requested Jim Schwartz because they had been kind of rumored to be connected with him.
Yep.
And it was a little, they slow played that one a little bit. Now Schwartz's defense didn't look good. The two games they probably looked the worst in were the Giants games. But and then I think Arizona was the other one for him too. So I thought maybe he'd get a little bit more attention. He is kind of a buyer beware guy, whatever you want to say. He, you know, he's not for everybody personality wise, but I guess the biggest big picture thing is that I was surprised at the jobs that were opened up, Detroit and Oakland. Big, you know, I didn't think even 2 weeks before the end of the season that would necessarily be the case.
Yeah,
and then the ones that didn't was Cincinnati and Cleveland. You know, the ones that we assumed would open up, but
sure,
it's just kind of wild when you think about it that even a month ago this picture looked a lot different.
No doubt. Yeah, Tampa Bay,
Tampa
Cutter hangs on in Tampa. I thought we had all kind of lumped him in that group, and I think, you know, Mike Mularkey, we'll see. I don't think he is on super firm ground there with John Robinson as they head into this wild card
Absolutely.
Game. Not the type of season they were looking for, but obviously did find a way to get in. So it feels like maybe this could be the year of the retread. If last year was the year of the rookies with Sean McVay and Sean McDermott both piloting their teams into the playoffs in year one, and a lot of talk about what they got accomplished, and certainly Kyle Shanahan's finish, but a lot of these names, Shurmur, McDaniels, Gruden, potentially Schwartz, maybe there's a trend in the other direction here. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, and it's, you know, as I've said, like, I think, you know, head coaching experience is nice and all, but that just means you've been fired before, right? I mean, young coaches don't step down from jobs unless they have some, you know, crazy unexpected circumstance or something like that. So, yeah, there's two ways to look at it, and it is interesting.
Everyone knows. I mean, knows the list of Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick and the guys who have flourished on a second go-around.
Yeah.
But obviously
– Mike Shanahan was a good one, obviously. Yep.
But, again, sometimes it is the fresh blood that can that can really kickstart an organization too. So looking forward to continuing to break down the coaching search across the league at profootballweekly.com. We currently have all Eric and Hub and I all ranked the six openings, and you can find all those on the website. We've got a lot of other good stuff up there, including our playoff previews, but don't go check those out until you listen to us do it on the pod, which we're about to do. Just kind of did the same thing on the Chicago Football Now TV show on WCIU, but Eric, let's just run through these games. You got Tennessee and Kansas City kicks off the weekend, and we just alluded to the Titans kind of limping in, not quite backing their way into. They did get the win they needed in Week 17, but not super convincingly. And I don't know, are you convinced again that this is closer to the early season version of the Chiefs, and maybe they're a team that's built for a run here?
Yeah, and that's usually when the Chiefs are setting us up for failure on our picks. You know, I had tweeted out yesterday, I said, well, I could see the Chiefs just stomping the Titans. A legion of Titans supporters told me that I'm not only wrong, but also a terrible human being. But I guess, yeah, I mean, you know, Chiefs, I think, are favored by more than a touchdown. The needle seems to push in that direction. Tennessee looked pretty bad prior to winning in Week 17. You know, I know they did a good job defensively. Mariota splashed a little bit in that game, but yeah, they almost feel like a happy to be there kind of team to me. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong because of the pressure you mentioned on Malarkey, but I feel better about the Chiefs than I do about the Titans. I know that's just a really basic vanilla look at them. I think the Chiefs, if they can somehow get Kareem Hunt going early, and we know the Titans stopped the run, that's a huge key for them. That just opens everything else up. And, you know, you get a shot to Hill and Kelce and all that. So I guess that's kind of how I'm looking.
Chiefs are 8.5-point favorites,
right?
Second
okay.
biggest of the weekend. Actually, the Jacksonville Jaguars currently 9-point favorites.
Oh, 9.5, okay.
Yeah, hosting Buffalo on the early Sunday game, which we'll get to in a little bit here. But, you know, this was supposed to be Marcus Mariota's season, I feel like.
Yep.
And it was supposed to be Alex Smith's last stand. And here we are, you know, entering the playoffs, and it's exactly the other way around. And you just have to wonder, at least I'm very curious just to know how Alex – this could still potentially be the end of his Chiefs run. I mean, Patrick Mahomes did nothing to dissuade people from believing that he can be an absolute stud in his first opportunity last week in Denver. And there's a big decision coming. Obviously, John Dorsey now in Cleveland, and there are other teams who would love to have Alex Smith. Could this be his last postseason run with the Chiefs? And if so, is he going to go out guns blazing? It kind of feels like he might.
It would be too bad. You know, I mean, it's fine. I feel like Alex is always sort of put in that we can improve on him. And they've already, you know, made this move for Mahomes. We saw, got a glimpse of him in Week 17. He looked, you know, he flashed on about seven plays where you went, okay, if he can harness this, he's going to be really good. But, yeah, absolutely. I could see, you know, Nick Foles flaming out of Philly and coming in to back up Mahomes next year or whatever. I mean, yeah, I could see that happening. I could see them moving on from Smith. If Smith goes on a run, what do you do then? But I think he'll come into this game with that kind of focus that he's had all season. The opener at New England, you know, the 5-0 start, the finish to the season. He's had career highs in almost everything, career numbers in almost every category. He's been really good, even with a couple little, you know, hiccups here and there. So, boy, it's crazy. And then you brought up a good point. What if Cleveland did get Alex Smith? Do you then – what? I guess that's one for down the road. But your draft plans with the first and fourth pick would change maybe a little bit.
Oh,
so.
Man, they shouldn't. If I'm Cleveland this offseason, I am doing the 2012 Washington approach, and I am either
drafting
doubling or tripling down. Seriously, I mean, if after 2.5 decades of futility, it's been more than that at the position, you keep throwing – at the wall until you see what sticks. I don't know if I was allowed to say that on it's a podcast, so I can't.
You now are. I've allowed it.
As long as I've been hosting this, and that's the first time I've kind of went, you know, got out over my skis a little bit. That's I'm kind of embarrassed by that. All right, so you said on Twitter that the Chiefs will stomp the Titans. Does that mean they cover the 8.5 point spread, Eric?
Well, now I'm fearing for my safety a little, but I know they lose by 8. Yeah, you know, the more I thought about it, yeah, you know, and Andy Reid in the past has played for field goals and been a little passive at times or not know when to be aggressive and that sort of thing. So maybe they dominate the stat sheet and the score doesn't quite reflect it almost. Like,
sure.
I could see them winning, you know, 24-14 or something. So, yeah, I say they could win it by that, but maybe not in shocking, you know, score fashion. So
I'm in the same ballpark as you. I'm going to say they do cover, and I think at the end of the day it comes down to the Titans were supposed to be this powerful run offense with a precise quarterback who avoids mistakes and is really good, especially in the red zone. They've been the opposite of that this season. Kansas City has an opportunistic defense. And
healthy Justin Houston.
Exactly.
Be great.
And just the inability, I think, from Tennessee to kind of keep that Chiefs offense off the field is why I think they win running away.
Yeah, and it, you know, as we tape this, we weren't 100%, but it does sound like DeMarco Murray is going to be out for this game. So Derrick Henry will be the guy that's, you know, coming across my Twitter feed as I see it here as, you know, as we're taping this. So, you know, that's obviously limits what they're able to do, and I feel like they
Does it though? DeMarco Murray averaging about 3.5 yards a pop this season.
I'm 100% with you on that, but even when they've been forced to use Henry, I still feel like they hold him back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's – I'm with you. I think Henry is the bigger play guy. What bothers me with Derrick Henry is that, you know, the plays that are blocked up for, like, 3 yards, he gets 3 yards sometime. Like, I still feel like – he doesn't maximize his carries. Murray will sometimes get you a little extra on those, you know, the plays that could be a minus one or a no gain. He turns into a 2 or 3 yard game. So
yeah,
that's where he's maybe a little better.
That's a good description. And I should point out Derrick Henry in his start in Murray's absence last week averaged 1.8 yards per carry, 28.51 rushing. did happen to break a 66 yarder in the receiving game for a touchdown. So, all righty, let's move on, Eric, to the Saturday night game and the Falcons, the defending NFC South. The defending NFC champs. Heading to Los Angeles to visit the current NFC West champ, Sean McVay versus Dan Quinn. The Rams have been obviously one of the stories of this season, but let's not shortchange the Falcons for just getting back to the playoffs, because there were a number of times, probably more often than not this season, when it looked like that, you know, wasn't going to happen.
Absolutely, yeah. And it was funny, I was thinking about it as you were talking about the previous game, kind of the quarterback narratives changing a little bit. You know, we had Matt Ryan on top of the world last year as the MVP, and coming within a couple of plays and winning a Super Bowl, he was stellar. He's dropped back. Jared Goff, meanwhile, has jumped up more than almost maybe anybody in the NFL at that position. So it's funny how the narrative has changed so dramatically, too. But you're right about this Falcons team. I mean, 3-0 start. Oh, and, you know, we're losing the next three. Getting a little warm again, even though with a couple of losses they wanted back. The Panthers loss and the Vikings loss were both, you know, one score, but they left plays on the field. But then finishing strong again, you know, even with the Saints loss in there. And so it's hard to know what to make of them, because like the Chiefs, they've been hot, cold, hot, you know, and maybe that momentum carries over. But I've also seen teams, you know, they spend so much time catching up, they kind of run out of gas, and like, you know, Saturday road game, who knows?
The one time the Rams, the one time I can recall off the top of my head that Sean McVay didn't really fully have the Rams ready to play in a big game this year was the trip to Minnesota.
Yep.
And, of course, that was a trip to Minnesota, road game, and they got stomped. I think it was 24-7. It wasn't very competitive after the first quarter. But otherwise, they've been ready for the bright lights on the big stage, and I kind of expect them to be again. It's kind of funny, Eric. I know these are still two offensive-minded teams. You know, got the number one scoring Rams this year, the number one scoring Falcons last year. There's actually some parallels. No, the Rams haven't been as dominant as Kyle Shanahan's Falcons were, but I kind of see some interesting parallels. And even with all that being said, I love Deion Jones. This Falcons defense in general, and Deion Jones in particular, is playing great football right now. And if you look on the other side, you see Mark Barron and Alec Ogletree. So if you like speed, and if you like kind of the new age linebackers that we've seen in the past couple years, that'll be one thing to keep an eye on against two really dangerous and diverse rushing attacks. Keep an eye on those linebackers.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's a good point. Philosophically, these teams have some similarities. You know, they may play different fronts on defense, or there may not be a Julio Jones on the Rams, and maybe Gurley is a little bit better than either of the Falcons running back, but they've got the duo. So there's little differences here and there, but, you know, pretty solid up front on both offensive lines. They want to spread the ball around, use every inch of the field offensively, you know, do things like play action. Hey, yeah, there's some – and then those fast, smaller linebackers and the speed up front, they finally got what the heck's his name? The pass rusher up front. Blanking. Vic Beasley. Couldn't think of his name right there.
Yeah, for a second, a couple months or something?
Right. They'd been having him drop and
still
play this
disappointing year for him.
Role.
But
yeah, no, I mean, now that he's the last three games had his hand on the ground, been better. So, the speed on defense may end up being, and maybe you can use that against them with some misdirection plays and end arounds and play action stuff. So this will be a fun game. I will have a hard time seeing this not being entertaining on some level.
I couldn't agree more. And just two beasts up front, too, and we'll move on to the Sunday slate here in a second. But for all the attention Aaron Donald gets, and he deserves every bit of it, he's about to be the richest defender in the NFL, and he might be the defensive MVP. But Grady Jarrett is playing great. great too. He looks like the Super Bowl version of Grady Jarrett again, and that has been a very positive development for this Falcons defense. It's going to be a lot to handle for John Sullivan and kind of the interior of that Rams front.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, Jarrett was, you know, it's like a rule. If you get three sacks in the Super Bowl and you're a young player, remember Coney Ealy a couple years ago? Like, you have to then appear on every media member's list for breakout player. And early on, you know, it didn't seem like Jarrett was flashing as much. But now, as you pointed out, he's been in the thick of things. He's a disruptor, and you have to worry about – I mean, Alex Mack's great, but you have to worry about the interior of both lines. I think right guard's been a thorny issue for the Falcons.
And, yeah, they're banged up there, too. Alex Mack didn't look like Mack last week,
point.
And
injury,
Andy Levitre hurt, too. So keep an eye on the injury report in this one, as you always would. Devonta Freeman, too, is dealing with some type of knee issue. I believe he was on the practice field yesterday, but we know how much he means to that offense. So, Eric, we didn't really do it during the regular season, but we're making picks, and the Rams are 6.5-point favorites. Does the home team get it done? And if they do so, do they do it comfortably?
I was not prepared for this. I'm going to boycott. No. This is the game I've gone back and forth on the most. I guess I lean towards the Rams just because I think they've sort of been the better and more consistent team all year. But part of me thinks I'd be foolish to dismiss them. I'll say – here's the thing, too. The Rams have maybe a kicking issue, too. So I was about to say Rams by a field goal, but now that I think about it, Sam Ficken is
great point
on shaky ground. So
and
Matt Bryant's been so good. How about that? I'll switch my pick on the fly. Matt Bryant, game winner, 48-yard field goal. I'll say 31-28.
Wow.
Yeah,
all right,
yeah,
I love
a lot
it.
Of points.
So we got the
that's a lot of points. Maybe 27-24. How about that?
We got the sixth seed coming in and knocking off the West champs. I do like it. I'm going to go with the chalk. I think the Rams hold on. I just think the short week and that long trip is going to be really problematic for the Falcons, and I feel like they expended so much energy getting to this point in the NFC title game defense season or NFC title defense season that they're going to come up a little short. I'll say 27-24. Rams hang on.
Okay.
Pro Football Weekly podcast. We got about 10 minutes left thereabouts. Let's get to Jacksonville, where, as I mentioned, the biggest favorites of the weekend, 9 points for the Jaguars and Blake Bortles and Leonard Fournette and the NFL's best defense. Eric, do you worry at all about the way that the Jaguars kind of limped a little bit to the finish line in the past couple weeks?
Yeah, I mean, right about the time we talked up Bortles and, hey, he's actually statistically one of the best quarterbacks. Well, okay, now the competition thickens. Obviously, the 49ers were white hot at the end of the season.
Right.
That was not necessarily on Bortles, even though he didn't play a great game, and then, you know, kind of coming up empty. And I do think not having a full cast of receivers has hurt him. I mean, Marquise Lee says I think he's going to try to play in this game. That'll help. Do we know his Hearns? Is he a question mark at this point? Do we know his status?
I think he got back for the finale. Okay. So, yeah, I would think he'll be okay.
He should be fine for this one. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, that'll help. You know, and then Keelan Cole's your third.
If the Allen Hearns of a couple years ago wants to reappear at any point, I'm sure the Jaguars would appreciate it.
They would welcome
it.
Still,
good guy to have out there, obviously. So
This feels like a 19-13 kind of game to me with maybe a 4 or 5 turnover game or something. But we'll see. I don't know. I'm excited because both teams haven't been there, but I'm also bracing for something maybe ugly.
Yeah, I think you're definitely on the right track with that, and we should point out LeSean McCoy on the practice field Thursday. That is just huge, of course, for the Bills because they've just had no one else. I think he's probably their leading receiver this season. Okay, never mind. LeSean McCoy, Joe Buscaglia of the Joe's
local,
a PFW correspondent, local Bills beat reporter, has a video of LeSean McCoy starting the practice out there during the stretching portion and then heads to the trainer's room after that. So
that's worrisome.
We don't want to, who knows what it means, but
he was limited.
He was limited. Exactly, that's what they'll bill it as. And I would just say the Bills won't even be limited. They'll be much worse off than that if they don't have LeSean McCoy. There's just not enough other guys they can count on, and especially if they're to fall behind and then try and have to get into that Jaguars secondary, that would be problematic, I think, even for the so judicious and risk-averse Tyrod Taylor.
Well, that was going to be my question to you, was paint a scenario where either LeSean plays and doesn't finish the game or doesn't play at all and the Bills win. How would it happen? There's turnovers? Is it special teams?
Yeah, Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer and Tre'Davious White thieving in the secondary. That's how it would happen. And it's not too crazy because it's Blake Bortles.
Yep.
But yes, that is about the only scenario I can envision is the defense scoring points and bailing out that offense.
Kelvin Benjamin doing anything or, like, you know, I mean, is there, like, another offensive?
No, maybe Charles Clay.
Clay could have a, yeah.
I just, you know, Zay Jones and Kelvin Benjamin against A.J. Boye and Jalen Ramsey, I'm not seeing it.
Sure.
You know, Benjamin did flash a little bit at the end of the season. Yes, he did catch that touchdown, although it wasn't counted as a touchdown. But I don't know. And the part we haven't even mentioned, and we'll get on here to the finale in a second, but the Bills' run defense isn't suddenly fixed. I mean, remember, it was just a wreck during the latter portion of the season. Maybe finished a little bit stronger, but we can't just ignore what Leonard Fournette can potentially do to this Marcel Darius-less group.
I got to quickly pause. Do you know who the Bills' receiving touchdown leader is this year?
I'm going to say Deontay Thompson.
No, he had one. Andre Holmes.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he caught 13 balls all year and three of them were touchdowns. I just had to look that up. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to throw you off there a little bit. But, and, you know,
Deontay was somewhere in there, the former Bear, not with the touchdowns. Maybe it was the receiving yardage.
He tied for third in catches and third in receiving yards. Okay. You are correct. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's just funny to look at this list of guys. Nick O'Leary was all of a sudden was a factor, too. So, but your question was about
who knows? we're just rambling here. I had mentioned Leonard Fournette versus that Bills run defense is probably one more matchup to key on, because Fournette, they've kind of, you know, he's been in and out of lineup a little bit during the end of the season, but you'd have to think he is in line for, if he can handle him, you know, 25, 30 carries in this one.
And correct me if I'm wrong, hasn't he had a couple of, like, 23 carry, 71-yard games or something recently where he's been, like, you know, he's done his job, but he hasn't busted any big runs. I think he had one where he had about a 94 or 5-yard game, you know, a 17 for 65 or something. I mean, he's had those games.
You're right. He's had an 18-48 in week 16 against the Niners and a 19-69 in the finale versus the Titans. So you're absolutely right. Way less efficient. Actually, gosh, Fournette's rookie year average dropped down below 4 yards. It's a 3.9 yards per carry.
Yeah. After that huge game in Pittsburgh and, you know, a couple other games along the way where he really looked good, it's been volume, but it hasn't been big yards. As I don't remember his last long run. I don't know. You'd have to look up the game log or something. But, yeah, I mean, it just – that's been sort of the surprising thing. So just simply turning around and handing him off three times may not get you a first down every time.
So Eric said 19-13 Jaguars. Just threw that out there. But we'll hold him to it if that number is not exactly right. His email address is No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to say even a little bit more comfortable for the Jaguars. I think they cover that big spread. I'll say 24-13.
Okay. Yep.
Does that mean they cover
it? You know, the Jags are weird too, because they have 8 return touchdowns this season, 7 on defense, 1 on special teams. So, like, every other game they're getting 7 points that are, you know, that you wouldn't count on from your offense. So that has to be factored in. And I know the Bills were so good turnover wise the first 7 games. They were plus 14 through 7 games. And I think since then they are -5.
Wow.
So in the last 9 games, if that makes sense.
So obviously that Nate Peterman debut was in the final 9 games.
right. Good point. He skews it a little bit. I forgot about that. So so they're about even. They're roughly, if you count that game as a scratch.
There you go. So, yeah, Bills-Jaguars both returning to the postseason. That will be exciting. I know the Bills fans couldn't be more excited. And, Eric, we close today on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, spending just a couple quick minutes on the Panthers and the Saints. Obviously the third time they will meet this season, and it was the Saints, of course, that swept the regular season series. Why might this time be different? And I should add, they'll have Marshawn Lattimore, who was absent in both of the previous outings.
Yeah, and you know, it's maybe a sports writing platitude or whatever, but like you it's hard to beat a team 3 times in a year. The familiarity's there. You sort of regress to the mean a little bit. So I'm a little shocked they're more than a touchdown favorite and everything. And you know, the Panthers are a tough team. I mean, they were this close to winning the division and, you know, getting the number 2 seed. They had that opportunity.
Yep.
The Saints have maybe taken a little bit of a step back. I know they beat them that second time late in the year, but, you know, Christian McCaffrey's starting to make plays. Funchess, I know you've talked about a lot, has been more of a factor. Greg Olsen was – look, they had trouble getting him the ball last week, but he's still Greg Olsen to me. And so if Cam can make a play or two – It's a good defense. They learn from their mistakes. I wouldn't be shocked if Carolina won this game.
No, I wouldn't be shocked either because they have the right formula with that defense. It's a Super Bowl caliber defense. Yep. They have a run game that has gained steam, although I still Jonathan Stewart, I believe, dealing with a back injury, so keep an eye on him. And Christian McCaffrey, yeah, he's got a ton of touches, but and he has improved as a runner. But I don't know. It doesn't seem to me like they have. Well, I don't think it seems to anyone like Mike Shula, Ron Rivera have managed to unlock Christian McCaffrey like Sean Payton has unlocked Alvin Kamara.
Very true.
There's no question which one is being maximized and used just brilliantly, and which one they're still. I think it was Shula who admitted it last week. We still don't know what McCaffrey's ceiling is at this point.
Yep.
Which is okay. There's no shame in that, but it does almost concede that they're still figuring things out.
That
with
quote
him.
Is kind of like the those pictures when you're in grade school where they're like, is it a woman or is it an old boot? You know, like when you look at it the right angle, you're like, I guess that's a compliment. I guess that he's kind of not a compliment, you know. So it's funny how he said that. I had not heard or seen that quote. But, yeah, I think McCaffrey's going to be a very good, you know, chess piece or whatever. I think he's shown flashes of it lately compared to the first half of the year when he was, you know, 2 yards a carry and not doing much in the receiving game. So
we talk about Kamara on offense and how just – you know, brilliantly he has been deployed, but we should mention 106-yard kickoff return touchdown last week. He had a 49-yarder the week before. Wasn't being used in a regular role that way this season, but you have to think it's playoff time, baby. You're leaving
Kamara,
it all out
you
there.
Said? Yeah.
Yes, I'm sure Kamara will be the primary kickoff returner, and I just think it's a little element of this game not to ignore because the Panthers have actually had a little bit of trouble in coverage units this season, I believe.
Yeah, you're right, and you know, I just felt like the Saints, that Thursday night game, was it in Atlanta, I believe, when Kamara went out early. They threw to him on the first 3 or 4 plays of the game, and then I think they handed off or threw to him on the first, you know, right away. It was a huge part of the plan. He gets knocked out with the concussion. They had no plan B. It was like they came in with one, plan. They have to be prepared for if Kamara is bottled up or if he leaves with an injury. Are we giving it to Mark Ingram? Are we throwing slants to Michael Thomas? Do we have some other, you know, thing that we like? Is Ted Ginn going to beat his old team? So I do feel like Sean Payton kind of locked himself in a couple times to the Kamara thing. But, yeah,
sure.
He's going to have a role. In big games, they have gone to him early and often in the latter part of the season.
And that speaks to just how dynamic this Saints team is, that we could get this far into the preview and you don't mention Drew Brees, the Hall of Famer, now. He reclaimed his record, I believe, this season for
completion percentage.
Took it back from Sam Bradford.
Amazing.
He's got like the third or fourth highest passer rating of his career, and he barely has even got any attention. But, Eric, I feel like in this one, and we're just wrapping up here in our final preview at the Pro Football Weekly podcast of Wild Card Weekend, you look at where the Panthers' defense has been a little bit susceptible late in the season, and it is in that secondary. It has not taken the football away, and teams have attacked them a little bit there. So I kind of wonder if maybe Rivera and Steve Wilks figure out the third time around how to slow Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara. And as you just said, maybe we do see Breeze and Michael Thomas, who we don't talk about enough either, are the ones that maybe really go off in this one.
Imagine coming into the meeting room and Steve Wilks, who's getting all these head coaching interviews, says, all right, guys, what we're going to do is let Drew Brees beat us, you know? And that would be, guys go, wait a minute, what? You know? Thomas Davis looking at him sideways and Kuechly going, dude, you know? But you're right. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked by that. I know James Bradbury's had, excuse me, one second, has had some moments and, you know, and Worley, I think, has stepped up and other guys in these roles have kind of filled out what, you know, what looks like a pretty good rotation back there. Mike Adams played a great game the other day, too. I was watching. I'm just trying to look at their roster a little bit. And their pass rush has been consistent. So if there's one thing you maybe can feel a little bit better about, it's that they've sort of played some good team defense.
I'll go first this time because I've been kind of putting you on the spot, and it's not going to be exciting. I don't know. We were talking about it with Hub on the TV set, and you usually want to try and find an upset, or I guess actually normally the favorites hold serve wild card weekend. He was saying he's thinking maybe there's an upset in here, but Eric, I'm not seeing it. I don't know. The Saints are 7-point favorites. I'm going to say this one's closer. I'm going to say this is a 3-point game, maybe even less than that, a 1-2-point game. But I still think the Saints end up on top in a fairly high-scoring game. I'll say 27. Well, I said that last game. I'll say 24-23 Saints. Hold on.
You know what? I'm going to take the cheese on this one. I'm going to go with Carolina in the upset. for some of the reasons I outlined, and, mm-hmm. and yeah, maybe it's a little bit of a fool's gold pick, and maybe the Saints really are the better team. Maybe they've got the Panthers' number. I don't know. I would not be shocked if they – there was a point in that Week 13 game where they could have won it. They get slipped away there at the end. Cam just needed to be better. And if Newton can come in and play his game and play up to the level he's capable of, I'll go Carolina 24, Saints 21. I don't think they generate quite as many points as they think, even if they start hot and have a couple of big plays.
I like it. I mean, I just picked against the past two league MVPs, and it seems like there could be a problem there. So I like you going against the grain with Cam. He's he's as volatile as they come. He's also as dangerous as they come. So
yeah,
that's going to do it, guys. We really hope that you enjoy Wild Card Weekend. It should be a fun one, and we'll be breaking it all down, of course, at ProFootballWeekly.com. One more reminder, head to iTunes, subscribe, rate, review the PFW podcast, all four of our podcasts. Check out our sponsor, LootCrate.com. A big thank you to our producer, Dan Mott, to Eric, a thank you, and the biggest thank you, of course, goes to you guys for being with us each week. We love that you check us out on the PFW podcast, and make sure you do the same thing next week as we get ready to recap the Wild Card Weekend and head into the divisional round slate at the ProFootballWeekly.com podcast. Thank you.